Record on the screen. Let's go. We're recording.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode with Conscious Convos. We have a very exciting episode for you today. It is actually based on one of the requests that we got from our listeners. And here we are answering to your request with a very special guest. I am very biased when it comes to speaking about our guest today because she is a sister, she's a mirror, she is a twin flame, she is everything you want to call it, Hawazin Jazar, my friend from Saudi Arabia, based right now in the US, covering the topic of shadow work. Welcome, Hozi, welcome.
Thank you. Trying to cover the topic of shadow work, honestly.
I'm sure you'll do more than great.
About it, like through my experience with it. But however I could help, it's such a pleasure to be here. Like I was saying earlier, I always listen to your podcast and I always feel like I'm dying to be a part of the conversation. And so it's very nice to finally be here.
So wonderful to have you here, Hawazin. Let me begin our conversation with expressing how jealous I am with the background that you have. It's natural, Mohammed, huh? It's not like it's not a photo.
It's not a Zoom background.
And it's not like four walls, legit forest.
Yeah, for some people this is every day. We're in Dubai. We have towers around, so you know.
I'm very familiar.
All good.
So wonderful.
Took a lot to get here, but it's worth it. Can't wait to have you. You all need to visit.
Hopefully.
Inshallah.
So Hawazin, shadow work. Tell us, what is shadow work? Let's talk about it. If you have any history or background to that work and the naming behind it.
Yeah. So the naming behind it, I wasn't honestly very familiar with the work until I started doing it myself. And I'll get into how I got introduced to it. But apparently it was developed by a psychiatrist by the name of Carl Jung. So that's J-U-N-G. Carl Jung, I believe it's pronounced that way. And he was a student of Freud. And so we're all very familiar with Freud and his work. And he was a student of Freud. He was a disciple of his and learned under him, but then started to have a different understanding. And so the big differentiator is that Freud believed himself to be well and believed his clients to be sick. And so that's how he approached his work. Carl Jung, on the other side, started realizing that there was a lot of similarities between, you know, his trauma or his own inner experience with his clients and his patients. And so he's the one who I believe termed the word shadow and shadow aspects. And then it was kind of picked up from there and a bunch of other people kind of, they have different words for it. I found out Louise Hay actually has a book about it. I believe it's called something about mirroring. So there are a bunch of other pioneers and psychiatrists and psychologists who took the concept and did their own work around it, but that's kind of where it stems from. And he defined it as something that is a part of who we are, but it's rejected or suppressed. And I found this really cool quote by him that is said, where he says, what is not brought to consciousness comes to us as fate. And so I find it fascinating that he very much tapped into how things that are unaddressed within us will be kind of called in from the outer world and through the universe for us to address them. And we'll think of it as fate or destiny. I thought that was really cool.
Well, yeah.
So basically our shadow aspects are parts of us that have been suppressed or rejected due to shame or blame, either witnessed or experienced, mostly in childhood. It can still go on, you know, it doesn't end, but once you are aware of this dynamic and once you start doing the work, you won't find yourself creating more shadow. It's more of a survival mechanism that you have when you're younger. And so you know, these aspects are authentic parts of who we are. They're not things you pick up from your environment, but things that you're born with. But because our core desire when we're born is to be, I found that's two things. Our core desire when we're born is to be loved and accepted exactly as we are. So anything that kind of gets in the way of that will be, as a survival mechanism, will be rejected or suppressed. So anything that will prevent you forming that attachment or that bond with your caregiver because they don't find this behavior or this trait acceptable, then it's going to be shunned to the side. And so eventually when, you know, you're a little past toddlerhood and you're a little bit into the teenage years, what happens is your ego is the part of you that starts rejecting, you know, these, suppressing these parts. I do like to talk about ego as not something that is like negative per se, or that's something that needs to be like killed or, you know, like overcame or anything of these things. It's just a persona. Like our ego is just a persona that we put together to survive.
It makes sense. It does make sense. Like it was developed for a reason, mostly to protect us. It's like a defense mechanism, as you mentioned.
Absolutely.
You mentioned two things there, Hawaz, and you said that the shadow is usually the defense mechanism that happens, but the two emotions that revolves around is shame and blame. Yeah. But is it only those two emotions? Can we, like, for example, add guilt to that? Can we add, any other emotions? And the reason why I'm asking, because in previous episodes, we had some other speakers talk about what is very similar to shadow work, but for example, she called it a bookmark. So something mm-hmm. that is just marked in your life, in your personality, and it comes in your life as fate as well.
Right.
But it kind of included much a bigger umbrella than just the shame and the
blame. Yeah, absolutely. And I remember that episode. Again, everyone that you have talked to up to now has set such a great foundation for your listeners to start understanding like what shadow work is and where I'm coming from. So I think that's a great step there. But definitely there are other emotions that can cause us to suppress those parts of ourselves. I would say it's always very helpful to dig as deep as possible to the very core layer. So for example, guilt is usually a result of shame. Mm. So it's not like the most, it's not that you actively were told to feel guilty. It's that usually what would happen is that you were shamed or you witnessed someone being shamed and therefore you have guilt.
You feel guilty afterwards, makes sense.
Right, yeah. Right. So I have found that just very helpful that when you come and like face an emotion or a feeling, to like just press just a little bit more against it and see, is this the final one or is there something behind it? But there's definitely other aspects that can create shadows and have to necessarily be shame or blame. But shame is such a toxic feeling. And it's such a, it has such sad repercussions behind it. I am actually determined not to teach. I speak to my son in Arabic as much as possible, and I am very determined not to teach him the word ayb because of how much, that's the Arabic word for shame or shame on you, because of how much that was said to us in so many different ways, even if it's just like joking, you know. I really hope one day he goes like, wait, what is that word? I never learned that word. I will feel like a successful mother if I do that.
That would be amazing because like, probably if you've never taught the word, you wouldn't even feel the emotion in the first place. Like it's a completely strange thing. While, many of us, we grew up in cultures or parenting style where we heard this word a lot and it became part of our reality to experience shame, and you only realize these things, you know, many years later, and you'd have to deprogram it, which is, you right. know, which is another word for working with your shadow, basically.
Right. No, it's right? true.
All the deprogramming and relearning yeah. and unlearning that you have to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a very, very heavy lift.
Yeah.
And it permeates into so much of our lives. And, you know, it's I'm so glad you mentioned that, because yes, words and language has so much power. You know, it's a spell of sorts. Mm-hmm. And so a word carries so much energy behind it. And, you know, especially, you know, you guys know with your interview, what was her name? She did the water.
Veda Austin. Yeah. The water.
Yeah, so that's the biggest evidence of the power of language and words. And so yeah, that is definitely an objective, is that if I can shield him from that word, can I also shield him from that feeling?
Yeah, we well, also like, talked about it. I don't know if we I think we did. We talked about it on the episode when we had Randy Weitenheimer, when we talked about the levels of consciousness,
and right, I remember him as
shame.
Well.
Shame is like the lowest, if I remember correctly, probably the lowest or the second lowest one, right below guilt. So guilt right comes right above it.
Yeah,
interesting, because it's also correlating with what you were saying earlier about guilt being the result of shame, and it's also in the same order. In the levels of consciousness, so it all ties in. I want to kind of take a step back. Sorry, you wanted to say something before we.
No, I was just agreeing with what you're saying.
I want to take a step back just to get to know your journey a little better. What's your background? How did you get interested in doing shadow work, or just your spiritual journey in general? At what point in your life did you feel like there's more to life than what you were taught, and you started to explore all the other facets of life and getting more into spirituality?
That's such a good question. And you know, to be honest, I don't reflect on it often. I because this was one of the, you know, questions that we had discussed for today, I had to do a lot of reflecting on where did that start, you know, because I often, you just find yourself somewhere, and I tried to think like, what was the seed, you know, what was the one that kind of cracked this open? And I think on a deep level, I never really felt like, growing up in Saudi Arabia, I never felt like things made sense. Like the answers that we were given, the structures that we were shown, the restrictions around us, it didn't make sense to me. Like something never clicked. Mm-hmm. You know, when you know that someone's just like hiding or like not telling you the whole truth, you're like, feet in there. There's like something missing.
There's
there.
There's something missing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's just fishy. Mm-hmm. And then I think one of the first things that cracked this open was I was gifted a book. Books have been kind of door opening keys for me. I was gifted a book called Sophie's World. I don't know if any of you have ever read this one.
I remember reading it.
And I was a young teenager. I was, I don't know, maybe 13, 14. I can't even remember, but I was pretty young. And that was, you know, this is prior, I don't know what the age demographic of people listening here, but this is, you know, prior to the internet, if you're aware of those things. There was no way of Googling, you know, we had to look things up in books. We had access to that.
Imagine that time actually existed.
Can you imagine? I know. And we didn't even have access to that much, you know, growing up in the Middle East. It's not like we had these expansive libraries that we can go and research things. We got what we got, you know, it's stuff you either would hear through TV, and also TV wasn't as expansive as it was today. It's not like we had satellite and, you know, it was just information was limited. So anyways, I remember learning about, you know, the philosophers and all these different philosophies and perspectives throughout history in this book. And I remember very distinctly going to sleep one day and thinking, what if when I close my eyes, this world doesn't exist anymore? And I remember that because that was such a pivotal moment for me. It was the first time that I started questioning my reality in that way, in a very like existential way. And so I would say that was like the first seed. From then on, you know, it was just, I feel like the universe just sent me different teachers and different experiences. I stumbled across an NLP course in Riyadh. Are you familiar with NLP?
Yeah, and I remember the when things in Riyadh and in Saudi, when NLP became very popular.
Right, like it was a thing.
It was a thing around 2008, maybe 2008, 2009. And there was even a lot of controversy about NLP in Saudi, even though it's like the most harmless thing ever.
I remember. Welcome to the Middle East.
It was the most harmless thing. And there was created so much conspiracy about why this teaching is entering, you know, Saudi Arabia, and it's going to corrupt the UAE. It was like so strange back at the time. And I remember reading about NLP. That was also one of my, you know, earliest introductions into, I wouldn't say spirituality, but more alternative ways of thinking about psychology and let's say psychology, and then entering into spirituality from through that door. But yeah, I remember NLP. Right.
Yeah.
And I still don't know much about NLP till today, after all these years. I know the basics, but I never like got so deep into it. But
yeah, it kind of got I don't want to say disintegrated, but it got like kind of spread out and integrated into other modalities. So a lot of the things they talk about in NLP are parts of other modalities that we all know. And so it's just a very scientific approach. It has a lot of basis in like neuroplasticity and neuroscience. And yeah, you know, thinking back, it is bizarre that there was such rejection and, like you said, controversy around it. But I think from my observations, that anything that can even come close to touching our religious beliefs is always deemed as a threat in the Middle East. And that's the tough part, you know? But yeah, I understand what you mean. It wasn't like, same for me, it wasn't a window into spirituality per se, but it was a window into like the journey of self-discovery, right? Of like that understanding. One of the books that was assigned to us was called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind. And that one was very powerful for me to also understand the layers and the nuances of who I am. You know, it's just, we're not taught these skills. We're not taught to be reflective. We're not taught to observe our thought patterns or our behaviors. We're just told, right? You're told you're bad. You're not listening to the rules. You're not obeying. You're not a good kid. You're not a good student. You're like, you are told all these things about yourself. And if you don't have tools to differentiate between who you are and what your behaviors are, you're going to end up owning all these things, and you'll have so much shame and guilt around them. And that's really what ends up happening.
Questioning was very much discouraged. Like if you were to question, then this immediately touched your belief. You're not a good believer. There are things that you just don't question because this is how it is. And if you're a good Muslim or if you're a good believer, you just basically take it as is without questioning.
Right. The mere fact that you're questioning shows that you are like, have already gone down the wrong path, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting that the thing about like religious belief, faith, whether someone believes or not, it should be strong enough to...
And then it just Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think there was a lag there in the recording. No, but I was saying, what's interesting is that the thing about religious belief, if you are a believer, questioning shouldn't scare you. And, you know, reading things from other cultures or embracing new teachings, and it shouldn't scare you. If you are absolutely sure that your faith is correct, you shouldn't be fighting and resisting other things, because if they're true, you're going to align with them. And if they're false, they're just going to feel not true. You're so confident about your faith that, you know, if something is false, it's not gonna feel right to you. So okay, bring it on. But for some reason that wasn't happening.
Taking it a step back, Muhammad, how is faith formed to begin with? Mm. It is through questioning, right? It is through finding answers
that it should be. Ideally, yes.
If we're standing on a solid ground, then this would be the grounds of you inquiring and finding answers to your questions. But everything else would be just like a shell, would be something that with any kind of poking will immediately collapse. Mm-hmm. Because it's not standing on any kind of strong grounds.
Yeah, if it's based on indoctrination or just like how we were taught was just to memorize stuff, mm-hmm. then yeah, exactly. It's, you know, just what do you call it? Like just a simple blow of the wind is just going to shake everything that you know, because it's not based on the foundation. So
right.
Yeah, that's how it was. This is the thing, something in common, I guess, among three of us. We all grew up in the same place as well. And this has been a repeating pattern on the podcast, but well, you know, it's really cool to see that it's often the people that have, for example, shadow work, is that people who have to do a lot of shadow work that, you know, enter this world because of what we've been through in our childhood, we come out the other side realizing that we need to do this inner work, this shadow work, while somebody that probably has had a more ordinary childhood or upbringing or a more balanced one, they would probably live their life not knowing that there's, you know, they can do this kind of work. So in a way, it's a blessing to go through this, but through these experiences, you know, at a young age, because often it reverses and it takes you to a beautiful place that it pushes you to learn more about yourself, how to heal. And then you're going to want to spread that knowledge to other people, to, you know, have other people want to heal themselves as well. So, yeah, I mean, one, you go from one opposite to the other opposite of the spectrum, which is, it's a blessing to go through that from a younger age.
It really is. Yeah. It's such a good point to bring up. You know, I remember our teacher, Lina and I shared a teacher, and they used to refer to it as the curse of good karma. And this, you know, when people have, just a good life and an easy life, and, you know, regardless of the level of privilege, you know, easy is a very subjective word. But like you said, people who are not pushed or prodded in this way often are not, you know, driven to seek answers because they don't have those questions, you know? And I've, you know, over the years, I have so often questioned, like, why am I here? And, you know, we're all on this mission to, like, find our purpose and all this good stuff. But through this work and through some of my work with astrology and some of my work with human design, I don't know if you're familiar with human design, but that is a very cool kind of modality to look at. I have just realized that this is why I'm here. This is my purpose. It doesn't matter what I'm doing for money or career or status or whatever. It doesn't matter. This is an incubator for me to kind of embrace these parts of myself and figure myself out and understand who I am and heal those parts. And through doing that and through possibly sharing that story in some shape or way, that would help someone else. Because I think that's what's cool about this podcast, is that I didn't have a lot of examples of people who had a similar experience, who have kind of gotten to the other side. And the other side is simple awareness, you know, it's not necessarily attainment or anything of that sort, but just to see past the veil into the truth. And so our brain really needs to see to believe. And so I've been introduced to a concept called expanding. And so by us being expanders for each other and being expanders for other people, because we didn't have that growing up, I think it's so important. And so that's why I feel like what you guys are doing and just the two of you, even just being on the podcast and sharing your stories, is so, so important for the people on our side of the world.
That's awesome. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
All right. So just reflecting back on what you said, going back to the shadow work. Mm-hmm. So everybody has.
Oh yeah, I feel just like we interrupted her story about when she was.
Oh yeah. Right.
I just want to know if you were done with it, because you mentioned Sophie's world and then the questioning. I just want to know if there's like something else.
Yeah, I was almost done, so I will just
let's go back to it.
This is like the Arab ways. You just like, I call it balloons. You have all these balloons of thoughts and ideas, and it's your mission to make sure that these balloons don't fly away by the time
you're
done. That's so true. And everyone talks over each other while it's happening. Yes. And the listeners to the podcast are like, what the hell is going on? But anyway. Okay.
You are so rude. Why can't we respect
each other? All right. Let's go back to your story.
Okay. I'll wrap it up. I won't tell you my entire life story, but
go ahead if you want to. It's all good.
Okay. That'll take up our whole time. From then on, it just my desires to kind of find truth and my physical existence just were really at a clash. You know, it wasn't supported. There wasn't a lot of room for seeking freedom. And I just wanted out. I wanted to leave. I definitely grew up privileged, quite a liberal household. We were very comfortable. But regardless of all that, I did have quite a tense relationship with my parents, especially with my mom. Being a rebel, being an Aries, being someone who questioned rules, being someone who liked to push the limits and colors outside the line, obviously that would stir the pot. A big pivotal moment for me was I had a suicide attempt in my early 20s. It was pretty close, but it didn't work.
And I was back in Saudi. When you were in Saudi Arabia?
I was, yeah.
Okay.
I needed to come to terms with the fact that I guess I have to do this. You know, I just wanted out. I wanted an exit. And so from there on, I tried to pursue some level of freedom. And I came here to the US for my grad studies. And very similar, Lina, when I heard your first episode and you were talking about your journey, I don't think we ever talked about this to each other, but very, very similarly, you know, I came and I was like, this is it. I have freedom. I can do what I want. I can be who I want. And so I just like went all out into that world and parties and drugs and like all the things. It's just like I did whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And it just felt so empty. Like it just wasn't the answer. And I was so, so confused because my entire life had led to this moment of like, I thought this was it. I thought this was the answer. What am I going to do now? You know? And then Lina and I stumbled across a very special program, and that's where we met our teachers. It was a bit of a meditation / martial arts program. And so it was very cool. You had a guest recently who was talking about how martial arts is a spiritual and I was like, oh my goodness, cool, because I've never heard that other than the program that we were in that kind of took that approach to it. And so it was very cool to hear. But anyways, again, long story long, that's kind of how I ended up into the spiritual world. And from then on, I just wanted to, you know, I studied under them for a while, and then I decided that it's time for me to find my own voice and trust my own voice and just strengthen that connection, that direct connection myself.
Right.
So yeah, I've been kind of just meandering and researching and just trying to dive into this essence of like who I am and how I fit into this big puzzle.
Right. Well, thank God, first of all, that suicide attempt didn't, you know, you're still here with us. You were meant to be here so you could share your gifts with the world and, you know, spread your light. And it's a never ending journey, right? So even though like you can learn about these things for your entire life, even till today, all of us, we feel like it's, you know, what we know is like a drop in the ocean of the potential of what there is to learn.
Yeah.
about ourselves alone and how ourselves work and why we act the way we do. And you know, there's often, you know, in like Sufi poetry and also in other mystical teachings where they tell you that what's actually inside is more vast than the entire universe. Mm-hmm. And I used to think about this like, okay, it's an exaggeration because the universe is huge. There's like billions of stars and galaxies. Like how could, but you know, it makes sense because even, I mean, the universe itself is inside of us. So it makes sense when you look at it that way. And we are deeper than everything that is out there. So it's incredible. You can learn about it for life. And that's what makes the journey even more interesting because the more you know, the more you realize that you don't know. This is another
right. And isn't that the ultimate wisdom, right? Is understanding how little you know. And I love that you put it that way because you're right. At the end of the day, I love Rumi poetry, Sufi poetry, by the way, Rumi obviously being a magnificent one. It's just, it comes from such a place of love. But really, really reflecting on who we are and just focusing, I have found at least for myself that if all I do ever is just figure out who I am on a deeper level day to day, that in itself is understanding the universe on a better level, you know, instead of trying to understand the world around me. I have found that I have gotten so many more answers about the world around me by figuring out answers within myself.
Yeah.
And so I love the reframe. I love to pivot that that perspective, you know, even in the world of, you know, self-development or self-improvement. I have such a hard time with these words because, you know, and it's hard because we're programmed to be like, you know, I want to be a better person, but it's like, there's no better out there for me to get. I just want to be more of who I am, you know, like I just want to be more whole and more authentic and just remove the things that aren't mine.
Yeah, on the self-improvement topics, I think, you know, there's always a category in bookstores, or it used to be, that says personal self-help. It used to be called self-help. They've changed it now. Then they made it self-improvement, as if yourself is something that is broken and needs to be improved. But this is a stage, right? It's a stage you go through as you grow, because you go from being completely ignorant about these things and then you start to discover this self-improvement world and you're like, ah, okay, I can. So it's a good stepping stone, and then you go beyond it, and then you learn that, you know, it's not self-improvement, it's returning to who I am in the essence, because my soul is already perfect, but I just forgot how to live from my soul that is already perfect.
100%.
Remembering, it's the act of remembering.
Remembering, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hawazin, back on the topic of the shadow work, I want you to tell us, like, in the journey, how do we realize our shadows, and how does the journey of shadow work, how does it look like? How do we heal that shadow aspect of ourselves?
Okay. So one of the easiest ways to spot how shadow kind of manifests is when you're triggered. And you touched on this, Lena, again, in the last episode, you talked about how so often when you're triggered, there's something that's a very good clue or indicator that there's something there within you to take a look at. Now, the thing to differentiate is between triggers that come from trauma or like inner child, you know, trauma, or triggers that lead to shadow. And so the shadow aspects are usually areas where you have judgment. So a very simple exercise is to think, where do you judge others? Where do you feel like you gossip about others? What behavior is it something that you're like, what? without feeling too much emotion behind it, you just feel like, you know, I just don't like that behavior. You know, like it just really bugs me when people do that. Like, I don't understand why you have to do that. These are sure indicators of an area of shadow, areas where you get really defensive, right? Like if someone's like, you know, either criticizes or touches on something and you get super defensive and you take it personally, that's also an indicator of a shadow aspect there. Sometimes there are repeated pitfalls that we go through in life. So areas in either relationship or career or money or friendship or whatever it is, you know, just some aspects of life that you seem to like consistently trip on or, you know, quote unquote, fail in. That's also an indicator that there's something there that might need to be integrated. Sometimes it is inner child trauma, but sometimes it's also shadow. So the key is just, again, just questioning those things. And the way to do that is to understand that whatever it is that you find shameful in others or you judge in others is probably a way that you are not allowing yourself to express, right? So for a very simple example, and there are some collective shadows that we all know of and we all have across the globe, regardless of like culture and religion, weight. Or age or race. These are all collective shadows that, you know, across the world, it was deemed that if you're overweight, if you're poor, if you are anything but white, of a white race, basically, if you're old, if you're young, if you're Muslim, if you're a Jewish, like there's just shame around that and there's immediate rejection. There. And so that's, you know, these are some examples of collective shadows that we have. And so you could look at someone and be like, I don't understand why they're overweight. Like, why don't they just watch what they eat? And that is just a very simple indicator that, you know, you think that, like when you look in the mirror, you probably have these thoughts about yourself. And so instead of coming to terms with them within us, it's much easier to reject them in ourselves and then reject them in others. Because if you accept them in others, then you're going to have to accept them with yourself. And that's really hard to do.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is just like an overarching, like general approach to understanding like how to find shadow. And
right. And I think one more is what makes you angry as well, right? So aside from shame and guilt is things that make you angry, like angry for sometimes for no apparent reason, for no clear reason. And so triggering any of these, let's say, unwanted emotions. And I feel like when these triggers happen, it's kind of like you're catching the beginning of a thread, something that is, you know, lying really deep. And if you catch it, and I'm like, okay, this is what let me catch this one today or for the next few days, this is what I want to be working on. Why did that thing make me feel ashamed? Or why did that thing make me angry? Or why did I judge that about that person? And you just grab onto that thread and you start to pull it out and you see, and who knows what you'll find down there.
Right.
right?
No, that's a very good analogy. I often actually, it's funny that you say that. I often tell people that over the years I have developed this like internal map in my head of, do you ever watch like detective movies and like mystery, like murder movies where they have this whiteboard?
Yeah.
And they have the pictures of people and you have the articles and then you have the red lines that like connect things. And so I've kind of taken a similar approach internally to like, to mapping out what is happening inside. And I promise you, more often than not, just like in those movies, the lines will usually connect to a single, not single, but a singular kind of experience or event or series of events that will all come back to. And they're all just kind of like, you know, symptoms. So just you're absolutely true. And like, don't get distracted with what's happening here. Follow that thread. Keep questioning. I always tell people, question everything. Just question everything. If you just do that in life, you'll be good. Just question everything. Don't take anything at face value, you know, even from your own mind. Like this is the answer here. If this tells you something, you question this as well, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Fascinating. It wasn't. And so now that we have a much clearer idea of basically how to understand the shadow aspect within us, how about the healing journey? How does it look like?
So just similar to many things in terms of the healing journey, the first most important and powerful step is acknowledging it, right? Like once you realize that there's a problem, that's the biggest step. And again, I didn't mean to say problem because I don't like to think in duality like that, but just that there's, you know, there's a trigger, then that's the first step. One of the other really powerful tools to step into after is to out it, is to drag it into the light, to talk about it openly. And so, for example, think of someone in your life that you really look up to and that you really hold kind of on a pedestal, but or just that their opinion of you is really important to you. And then think of some things that if this person knew about you, just like how mortified you would feel or how embarrassed you would feel. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the most powerful tools, is to drag this feeling out into the light. And we all know from our very close relationships that so often you might talk about these things with a trusted friend and you find out that it's not as ugly or shameful as you think it is. Mm-hmm. You know, shame thrives so much in the darkness, in the corners. And once you pull it out into the light, once you pull out that monster from under the bed, you can look it in the eye and you're like, you know what? You're not that scary. That's fine. And so these are very small like tidbits to take you down that journey. Another thing is to own it. Something that's said often in shadow, in the world of shadow work, is like what you don't own owns you. And so if you don't own an aspect of yourself, it's always going to have power over you. It's always, like you said, Mo, you know, it's going to like push your buttons and it's going to get you angry. It's going to trigger you. And then you are, in a spiral, just reacting to this emotion because it has power over you. So when you own it, when you talk about it and you wear it as a badge of honor and you wear it as part of your personality, like this is just who I am, then it doesn't have that power over you and it very quickly loses that. Another tool that I have found super, super helpful is not just to out it and own it, but to actually raise its self-worth. So for example, there are aspects that not only were they like part of my shadow, but after integration, I am now very proud of these parts of myself. Like, so not only did I bring it out from the shadow, it's now something that actually makes me very unique. And it's something that I can offer to the world around me. And I can bring it into my relationships with others. And so raising that self-worth and the worth of that trait from like from it being a limiting belief to it being a superpower. And what helps is finding others who do that, you know, finding others who embody that in a shape or form. A simple example for this, again, just going back to weight, is over the years, kind of there have been some celebrities and models in the fashion world who have been, you know, more accepted into that world, even though they don't fit into the more traditional body shape of, you know, a skinny model. And these people are celebrated, they're on covers of, you know, Sports Illustrated and magazines, and, you know, we all know Lizzo and Ashley Graham, and they like, they are out there, you know, they are out there in their like absolute glory as a great expansion into realizing that there's nothing wrong with their, like what, how much you weigh and what you look like is completely irrelevant. It's not something that you should, you know, you should aspire to be. Now, if it's something like for your own health or something that you want to do authentically, great. But to do it as part of like to avoid shame is just is not authentic to, you know, to your being. And so that's a great way of seeing someone who can like raise that self-worth and like being like, okay, if they can do it, and I can do it, you know, I can do it and be inspired to do that.
So basically, to tie physical appearance to self-worth doesn't help for sure.
Right.
And go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Now I was gonna say, I mean, what you were saying about owning the shadow part, first acknowledging it, owning it, basically admiring it. It's all part of loving yourself unconditionally, which is what you were saying in the very beginning, right? Because these are parts of yourself that were unaccepted by maybe by someone else or by society. And then as you begin to accept them yourself, you don't really need other people outside of you to accept them. It stops mattering once you've accepted them about yourself.
Right.
And once you've accepted them about yourself, nothing triggers you about them anymore. So other people can't trigger you about it. So you become so comfortable with these things that they stop being triggers. And if there's something to heal, they might actually start to disappear as you accept them, which is something amazing and very counterintuitive, that when you accept something, you think that you should fight it, and once you've accepted it, it actually goes away. You accept a part of you that is angry or that is bitter, and you actually be kind and compassionate towards it. And you think, oh, now I'm loving this part about myself, so it's gonna stick around. No, actually, this is how you heal it. And then you realize that it's not coming up anymore. And that's what was needed in the first place.
100%. Absolutely. Really like just like hit it on the head there, because that is actually one of the biggest indicators of knowing that you've healed those or integrated those parts of your shadow, is instead of being triggered by that behavior, your reaction will be to have compassion and empathy and understanding. You know, it's not that you would be like, you'd be like, oh, I'll just forgive them. No, you won't even need to forgive them. You won't even, you know, get there. And what you said is absolutely true, is that we often, when it comes to our healing journey, we often look for this like big, like aha, like this like big reveal of something. But more often than not, it's not that you have that big reveal. You all of a sudden find out that like, oh, this thing isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, and it's exactly like you said, the universe just blew. Right. Like there's no need for this to pop up in your universe anymore. You've addressed it. It's done. Right. Move on to the next lesson, next level, next layer, you know, next teacher. And so this is just part of the magic of this work. And accepting is a very key word. So I'm very glad you brought it up, because This is actually a pitfall that I kind of landed in a couple years ago, actually, and around 2019, right before the pandemic hit, is I found myself that I got into a loop of in my efforts to fix or heal these parts of myself, I found myself actually feeling more guilty and more shameful because now I'm in this world where I'm discovering all these things that are wrong with me. Does that make sense? Where it's just like, I was just finding more reasons to flog myself. It was so counterintuitive. It was so counterproductive. Mm-hmm. But when I started doing shadow work and I had this realization, like you said, that it's just about accepting and just, it's like someone who's drowning, you know what the term is when they say that someone's treading water, when you're drowning and just like, it's a strong current. Like if you fight it, you're just going to get tired and you're more likely to suffer eventually. So the key to deal with like really strong waves like that is just to surrender, right? Like you go limp. And to have that sense of surrender and acceptance and kind of trust and in the process and trust in like how things are working out is such an important mindset to have during doing this work, because you could have the best intentions, but if you still, like you said, feel like you're broken or there's something to be fixed, then that in itself is something to reframe. It's the opposite. You are whole and there have just been layers put upon you, and it's on you to just like dig deeper, you know, as opposed to like try to attain something that's outside.
Yeah.
Just put down those bags, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. How are we doing with the time, by the way? Because I know you have another commitment.
I'm good on my end. So if we want to go in a few more tangents, count me in.
Sure.
Okay.
One topic that I always love to speak to Hawazin about is conscious parenting. And I want to know, I know we touched on that in the beginning of the episode, but I want to just go back to this point and just elaborate a little bit more. How did shadow work influence your approach with your child, Hawazin?
Oh, man, it's good we have time. Because not only did it influence my parenting, I can genuinely tell you that I don't think I would have become a parent if I hadn't done this work. I wouldn't have at all. I was someone who was very certain that I did not want to be a parent. I didn't want to be a mother. And not only did I reject that aspect of myself, I also had judgment of others around me who did it, because I felt like it was settling. Of course, now I know, being on the other side, how arrogant that sounds, but you know, just, you know, just in for the sake of transparency, this is just where I was. Growing up in an environment that didn't have a lot of monetary value for women, you know, it felt like your purpose is like, sure, you can go to school, sure, you can get an education, all that good stuff. But really, at the end of the day, you're here to marry someone, have kids, and stay at home.
Yeah.
I know that Saudi is a very different existence right now. And if some people who are listening don't understand what I'm talking about, just know that this was the reality for us, you know, growing up. And yes, there were people who worked, you know, there were women who still worked. But for me personally, not a lot of women in my family were breadwinners, you know, per se. My mom worked, but there were four of us. And so she stayed home eventually to be a mom, which I now, of course, understand what a privilege that is, and how much work that is. But I didn't want to be that. And due to that difficult relationship with my own mother, I also shamed that aspect of like, I don't want to be that. I didn't. And so this is a good example of how shadow can be something that you reject or shame yourself, not just something that someone shames in you, but it's something that I witnessed and I was like, I don't want to be that way. And so therefore, if I don't become a mom, then that will be a sure way for me to never be that way. So it was just a very, you know, avoidant approach. But I was completely unaware of all of this. I had no idea. I in my conscious mind, I thought, it's not the lifestyle I want. You know, I want to be free and I want to go around and I want to have a career and I want to be this big boss and I want to do all these, you know, all these other things. But through doing the work and through a key moment was also accepting what, you know, within myself, accepting the parenting that I was given and accepting my mother for who she is and how hard she worked, because now I understand that she just did the best she could with what she was given, you know, and we all know they had it a lot harder than we did. You know, they tried to do better by us and they did, you know, but it's our job also to then do better. You know, that's just our generational like responsibility. A lot of parents get offended when their kids want to do something different or don't want to follow in their footsteps. It's like, I'm not doing this to offend you. I'm doing this because it's my job to make the next generation even better and to heal. My child doesn't have to pass them on, you know.
And our children will do exactly the same thing when it's their turn.
Right, right. And like no one comes out of this unscathed, you know. As much as I have tried and I could consistently try to be a conscious parent and keeping all these things that I've learned about my own healing in mind and trying not to pass it on, I'm not perfect and there's still a lot in me that there's still healing to be done and lessons to be learned. And so as much as I try, I'm sure he's gonna have his own, you know, bucket to work with. And so it's just gonna be my responsibility to allow him the space to have, you know, the difficult feelings and to have the difficult conversations and to be honest with him when he's ready about my experience as a mother. And I am positive that, you know, being born in the height of the pandemic is going to have some generational trauma there. You know, deep within the DNA, I was pregnant in 2020. It was a very difficult year for all of us. And so I'm sure there's work. There's something that is passed on there that'll be for him to deal with. But yeah, to answer your question is that I wouldn't be here if I hadn't done the work and if I didn't strengthen that voice with my intuition, because that's how it happened. All of a sudden one day I started thinking, do we? Is this something I want? It just started looking appealing, which was very bizarre to me. You know, I would see people with kids and I'm like, oh, that's cute. Wait a minute. That's cute. Who are you? It was very much an identity crisis. But yeah, I'm very, very grateful for that. It's the most badass thing I feel like I have ever done. I don't know how people like this is parenting. This has been parenting this whole time, and no one. I feel like no one talked about this. No one talked
no one
about
told
this.
Us.
No one told us. You know.
No one told us.
Yeah. No one told us. But also, you know, on one hand, yes, no one told us. But on the other, it's also much harder being a cycle breaking parent. You know, there's the norm. Fitting in parent, and that's of course hard because of the reality of parenting, then the physical and emotional challenges, and then there's conscious and cycle breaking parenting, which is what we're trying to do, which is like a whole other level of trying to parent, because there's so much that you're processing, and you're coming up against yourself over and over again.
Right
so challenging.
The past 2 years just to see, you know, reflect on that. We've been living in a different universe. So everything really has changed for us in the past 2 years. And everything is really accelerating towards higher consciousness and higher, better understanding, more healing. So yes, parenting right now is extremely different than how parenting used to be.
Yeah, yeah. And in bubbles, you know, especially earlier in the pandemic, without support, without family around, and with this new level of fear and anxiety, you know, about and uncertainty. I felt this is one of the things that happened earlier, you know, in the pandemic when I was pregnant. I would talk to my husband and be like, are we crazy to do this? Like, we're bringing a soul into this world, like this one, the one that's burning up. You know, we were living in California at the time and waking up and just like, there were fires raging because of the heat and climate change and the pandemic. And I'm like, this doesn't feel very smart. It just doesn't feel like the right thing to do. But what are you going to do? The soul wanted to come through and it was meant to be. And it's been, you know, I always tell people that my belief of the pandemic is that it was, were you ever grounded when you were kids? Were your parents like, you're grounded, you can't
sure.
leave?
Of yeah. course.
And so I think I mean, what a silly question, but we're Middle Easterns, we're born grounded and then maybe you'll be released at some point, but the default is you're not going anywhere. My belief is that the pandemic was the universe being like, all right, you're all grounded. All of you, all the entire world, everyone, every soul on this planet grounded. You're going to stay home and you're going to think about what you did. And you're gonna process your life and think about your actions and think about your values. Literally, this is like what I believe, and that's why a lot of us have shifted so much afterwards. A lot of the systems are breaking down. A lot of us are reevaluating what's important to us, our lifestyles, our partnerships, our friendship, you know, everything. We're just questioning everything. And so in a way, it was such a rude and needed awakening, you know? Yeah.
I love the metaphor, actually. It's quite.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. That was a really cool.
Go to your room.
I like it. Never thought of it that way, but it makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So as people who have experienced it often, I feel like it just would resonate.
We always ask our guests to recommend either a book or someone, a figure that's had influenced your spiritual journey. And who would you recommend?
Oh, such a tough one, because I just eat up books. I'm such a slow reader, but I love books. I think The top one for me would be a very old book, The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. Really, really helped me reframe just a lot in my life. Just the fact that it defines things, you know, it defined children and love and marriage and pain and joy. These are things that I constantly finding myself, like my book, I've had the same copy from the beginning and it's like, it's all yellow. It's like, you know, yeah. The pages are falling out because I reference it so much. I remember I lent it to my brother one time and he probably hated the fact that I lent it to him, because every day I'd be like, are you done? Can you give it back?
I need it back right now.
Don't use this one. Go get another one. Give me, I don't know what I was thinking, but I lent it to him one time. But he returned it. It's in good shape. The other series of books that has had such a big effect on me, and I am just like a nerd and a witch in many ways, is the Harry Potter series. I know the movies are cute and all, but the books are actually really, really magical. All puns intended.
Actually to have her on our podcast. One day, one very magical day. I don't know, like out there.
Why not?
I promise you, if this dream ever comes true, you're gonna be here with us.
Okay, thank you. Because I would just die. I would die. she is just, she downloaded this world from somewhere. And a lot, and there's so much in these books that is true in reality. Actually, one, I'll go off on a quick tangent if we have time. The most recent books and movies were The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Are you guys familiar with this movie?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Okay. Well, Lena, I never ask Lena about movies because very rarely will Lena be like, yeah, I saw that movie.
Exactly. She knows.
I'm just as bad. I'm probably just as bad, by the way. So.
Oh my goodness. I'm a big, big movie person.
But I would like to know. I would like to know. So.
Yeah. And so this is actually a good one for people who are listening today, specifically about Shadow, is that in the most recent movies, they're called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So the first one in particular, there is a character who's the villain who has something that they refer to as the Obscura in the movies and in the books. Hmm. And this Obscura is his basically his magical potential suppressed. Hmm. And so because he was born into a family, a non-magical family, magic was rejected and was shamed. Mm. And so he didn't have the space to use it and to kind of fine tune it and figure out how it works. And so it became this very destructive, out of control kind of wave of energy, and he's a villain in the first movie, and this is a very, very good example of Shadow, of what the Shadow can do. You know, it's just most of the violence and anger and war we see in the world is a result of our shadows, and we will always be at war with each other as long as we remain at war with ourselves.
Right.
And so this is just a very good example of Shadow at play.
And it's then really the amazing, last, right? How these movies, it's amazing how these movies, depending on how you're looking at them and what your level of consciousness is while you're watching them, can have different meanings, and you're going to understand them in a different way than someone else that doesn't know, for example, about shadow work. You're going to pick up that. You know, someone else might pick up something completely different as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just amazing. And I think this probably applies to a lot of other movies too. Not only that example you gave. I had a friend recently that asked me to rewatch the Matrix series again.
Very good one.
I haven't seen it in like 15 years. He's like, watch it now. And see how differently you're going to understand that movie.
Relevant, yeah.
Yeah.
Relevant to this, our reality right now.
Yeah. I haven't had the time yet, but I will eventually. I'll get to it.
You should, yeah. It's just that, again, that's why I love the Harry Potter series. There's a lot of, and that's just one example, right? Like there's so many books in the series. There's a lot of real magic there, you know, like the power of love and how protective it is. It's endless. But I just one quick thing just to follow up on what you're saying, Mo. I took a philosophy course years ago at a summer program, and there were movies assigned, and The Matrix was one of them.
Oh, Matrix
was assigned, Vanilla Sky.
I'm not surprised, actually.
Memento. Yeah. No, these things are, you know, at the end of the day, movies are very similar to books and poetry. And like, these are downloads that people are getting and writing, and they're just channeled. Everything can be a lesson. That's why I don't like to villainize things. Like, I understand we don't want to do a lot of screen time, all that good stuff. But there's a few, I currently don't have a lot of time to like sit and have rituals and meditate. And I just don't, my lifestyle isn't like that anymore. But I don't feel like I'm missing out. Like if you take every opportunity and every experience and every person as a teaching and as a lesson, then that's it. Like you're good. You're set. You know, you don't need to the big aha moments have never come to me sitting on a mat, you know, not that I'm saying like, obviously meditation has such great value and it's I probably need it a lot right now. I just don't have the time for it. But
yeah, I did. Did you as well?
I did.
Are we back?
He's coming back.
Yes.
Okay.
Now we lost you for a few seconds, but I think we caught most of what you were saying about meditation, that, you know, most of your insights don't come to you while meditating, because everything in the world could be a teacher, if you're catching it. And yeah, even though meditation is a beautiful thing, and it's definitely something that if you have time for, would definitely add even more. But if you're mindful all the time, I mean, life can be one long meditation as long as you're mindful of it. So as long as you're in the moment, and for absolutely. I don't know, Lina. Go ahead.
Sorry, Ahmed. Anything else you'd like to add? Before we wrap this up, Hamed, any more questions?
No, not from my side. I mean, we could go on. I have a personal thing that came up that I need to take care of, but I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me. Such a pleasure.
Thank you. A wonderful experience. And truly. Thank you for sharing a lot of personal details that, you know, could sometimes be difficult to share, and but I'm sure the listeners really appreciated them, and
very courageous.
Thank you very much.
So we can all just feel a little a better place.
We can do this again, because I know you have, you know, you mentioned human design, you've mentioned astrology, there's a lot of other topics that we could cover that need more than just 1 hour of talking. So you're welcome to be back, in the future.
I would love that. Careful what you offer, because I would love that. Like I said, I hear you guys and I'm like, I want to talk with them.
Sure.
So, and this was so much fun. So I'd love to anytime. I know I'm on the other side of the world, so timing is tough, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we will.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. You guys have a good rest of your day.
Thank you everyone for tuning in. We'll be posting this episode soon. We'll post Hawazin's whatever Instagram, social media, however you would like people to find you. And that's it. Thank you everyone for tuning in, and catch you in the next one. Take care of yourself.